Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with an analysis of today's arguments before the Supreme Court on the overturning of California's Proposition 8 by Judge Vaughn Walker of the Ninth Circuit Court in San Francisco. Elizabeth Wydra, Chief Counsel of the Constitutional Accountability Center, who was in the court today, joins us to discuss what can be interpreted from the blizzard of questions by the Supreme Court justices that might indicate that gay marriage could soon be legalized. Then we will speak with Deborah Brodigam, a professor and director of the International Development Program at Johns Hopkins University and author of The Dragon's Gift, The Real Story of China in Africa. We will discuss the new Chinese leader's visit to Africa and the BRICS, that's Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa summit he is attending in South Africa. And we will also examine the extent to which Africa's honeymoon with China is over. Then finally, we will speak with the organizer of a recent conference in Paris where the Syrian opposition and representatives of the Kurdish minority met with senior American and French officials to design power-sharing arrangements in a post-Assad Syria. David Phillips, the director of the Peace Building and Rights Program at the Institute for the Study of Human Rights at Columbia University, joins us to discuss what is being done to close the gap between the political representatives of the Syrian opposition and the various factions of fighters in the field who are now starting to shoot at each other. Joining us now is Elizabeth Wydra, who's chief counsel of the Constitutional Accountability Center, a think tank, law firm, and action center dedicated to showing how the text and history of the Constitution support progressive outcomes. She frequently participates in Supreme Court litigation and has argued several important cases in the federal courts of appeals. Welcome to Background Briefing, Elizabeth Wydra.
Thank you, Ian. It's great to be with you.
And you're in the court today, and I heard quite a bit of it today on the radio, and there was certainly a blizzard of questions. It sort of reminded me of Chris Matthews, where he never lets his guests finish what they're saying. They sort of seamlessly cut each other off. Now, is that how it's always done, or was it particularly intense today?
You know, it is frequently like that with this court. They are very active questioners. And, you know, in some cases, actually, Chief Justice Roberts, as sort of, you know, the supervisor of the group, will have to negotiate and say, you know, actually, can you respond to Justice Sotomayor, you know, something like that. So they were extremely active today, which is, I think, a reflection, you know, obviously of the fact that they are very active questioners, but also of the importance of the case. And I think particularly today, a reflection of the fact that I don't think that the justices even know which way they're going to come out on this, which is fairly unusual in a big case like this.
Well, Justice Anthony Kennedy is considered the swing vote, and people think he may well be sympathetic to the idea of overturning the ban on gay marriage. He's said that we're in the courts in entering uncharted waters. But my understanding is that the sort of 900-pound gorilla in this is whether or not it's the issue of standing is going to be invoked, and if so, would you mind explaining to our audience, Elizabeth, what that means? And I take it that if that were to happen, then Judge Vaughn Walker's ruling would stand, and Prop 8, the ban on Prop 8 would stand.
Yes. So standing in the federal law refers to basically the legal right that someone has to appear before a court. And in the Prop 8 case, what happened is that the couples who wanted to marry and were challenging the constitutionality of Prop 8 filed a lawsuit, and the Attorney General and Governor of California said, we agree with you that this law is unconstitutional, and so we're not going to defend it in court. And so the official proponents, the folks who got it on the ballot in the first place, stepped in and said, we will represent the interests of Proposition 8 and try to defend it in court. And so the district court, Judge Walker's ruling, which declared Proposition 8 unconstitutional, is a proper exercise of federal court power, because the people who were coming into court and claiming a legal injury were the couples who want to get married and clearly under federal law have a right to bring that claim in court. But when the case was appealed by the supporters of Prop 8 to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, that's when the question of standing, and again, when the supporters of Prop 8 lost in the Ninth Circuit and then appealed to the Supreme Court, that's where the question of whether or not they have standing really comes into play. And so if the Supreme Court finds that the official proponents of Prop 8 do not have the legal right to defend it in court, then that means that the Supreme Court wouldn't issue any ruling, and that means that they would vacate the Ninth Circuit's ruling. But importantly, it means that the district court's ruling, Judge Walker's ruling, which declared Prop 8 unconstitutional, that ruling would still stand. And so I think that would be, while not sort of the categorical victory that supporters of marriage equality would like from the Supreme Court, it would nonetheless still be a significant win for couples in California who want to get married, and the families of the nearly 40,000 children in California whose families right now are branded as second class by this system in the state, where they are told that their families, their parents, are not good enough for the institution of marriage. And so that would be a significant win to have that system struck down.
And do you think, Elizabeth Wider, that that's the most likely outcome? I mean, we're not going to hear until June, but everybody's speculating, so why don't you?
Well, it's very interesting, because one thing that was clear after argument today is that if the justices can avoid issuing a ruling on the merits, they would really like to do that. What is less clear is how exactly they go about it, because this standing issue that we talked about certainly was discussed a lot. But some of the justices, like Justice Kennedy, who's a very important vote on this court, he didn't really seem to buy that argument. But all of the justices seemed to want to sort of let the issue percolate amongst the states and allow further public debate on it. You know, despite the fact that, look, you know, the way the Constitution works in our country is that we don't put our most fundamental rights up to a vote. It is the court's obligation to apply the Constitution, and in this case, apply the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment, and say, look, it doesn't get to be decided by the people of a state whether or not the fundamental right to marry is afforded equally to all. The Constitution requires that same-sex couples and opposite-sex couples have the same right to marry the person that they love.
Again, I'm speaking with Elizabeth Wider, who is the chief counsel of the Constitutional Accountability Center, a think tank law firm and action center dedicated to showing how the text and history of the Constitution supports progressive outcomes. She frequently participates in Supreme Court litigation and has argued several important cases in the Federal Court of Appeals, and was in the Supreme Court today when the justices were questioning witnesses for and against overturning Prop 8, and by extension, at least indicating how maybe future rulings may take place on overturning a ban on gay marriage. Tell me about who this lawyer, Charles Cooper, is. He was representing opponents of gay marriage. He got, I thought, fairly effectively grilled by Justice Elena Kagan and Stephen Breyer when he insisted that marriage is about promoting procreation as primary reason for limiting the definition of marriage. And then they, of course, immediately said, well, wait a minute, infertile opposite-sex couples can marry, and even somebody at the age of 55 can marry. I think, Justice Kagan said, I can assure you that at the age of 55, you're not going to have any kids, you know.
Chuck Cooper defended vigorously the virility of older men by suggesting to Justice Kagan that, oh, yeah, it's not a problem for men over 55 to father children. But, you know, I think that one important thing that happened today is that these so-called rationales for excluding gay and lesbian couples from the institution of marriage just were shown to be absolutely foolish. You know, the idea that the whole point of marriage is to foster procreation, you know, doesn't in any way account for the fact that states allow couples who are infertile, who are elderly, or who simply don't want to have children to get married. And one really important exchange that I think happened today was Justice Kagan asked Mr. Cooper, the lawyer for the supporters of the ban on gay marriage, she asked him, what harm is it that occurs? How are opposite sex couples harmed by including gay and lesbian couples in the institution of marriage? And he could not give her a single instance of how heterosexual couples are harmed when gay couples are allowed to marry. And I think that that is a really telling concession that, you know, even let's say, even if you bought this somewhat outlandish idea that the state has an interest in fostering heterosexual marriage because they want responsible procreation, it doesn't harm that interest in any way to allow loving, committed gay and lesbian couples to also enjoy the freedom to marry. And so whatever happens, I think that that was a very important development this morning.
So I don't know whether you saw what was going on outside Elizabeth Widrow, but there were some jeering and shouting between the anti-gay marriage protesters and the pro-gay marriage protesters. And I thought what was interesting in many ways about Theodore Olson, of course, who argued today before the Supreme Court, back in the arguments over Prop 8 in San Francisco before Judge Vaughn Walker, Judge Walker warned Theodore Olson that he should consider not that he would lose this case, but he might win it before the Supreme Court. And he went on to talk about how our politics have been plagued for 40, 50 years by the politics of abortion, and implying that there could be a social backlash to a legalizing gay marriage. Do you buy that argument?
Well, I don't buy it in the first instance because I think there is such a strong momentum in support of marriage equality. I mean, you know, for the younger generation, it's simply not a big deal to have friends whose parents are gay, to know people who are gay or lesbian and are going to get married. And so I think it's really just at most a generational issue, and I think the momentum is going in that direction. But even more important is the fact that the Constitution applies regardless of public opinion. And when the Supreme Court in 1967 struck down laws that banned interracial marriages in Loving versus Virginia, the majority of the country supported prohibiting people of different races from marrying one another. And that didn't change the fact that these laws were unconstitutional and that they were impermissibly discriminatory on the basis of race. And so I think we're in, you know, an even stronger position in this case, in that you have a majority of Americans who support the legality of same-sex marriage and the plain words of the Constitution's guarantee of equal protection of the laws, which clearly applies to all Americans, black or white, gay or straight, man or woman. And so I think that, you know, it's something for the political folks to keep in mind whether there's going to be a backlash, but it's not really the justices' jobs to balance that equation. Their job is to apply the Constitution.
So, Elizabeth Widrow, the polls, of course, indicate 60% of Americans think the federal government should recognize same-sex marriages. So how do you account for that change so quickly from Prop 8 here in California? Was that just a quirk that passed, or were the opponents – I remember seeing the ad campaign. The people who were against Prop 8, in other words, who for gay marriage, had the lamest commercials. So that could have been a factor. But what happened? Because they didn't even they were sort of afraid to broach the real issue. So I'm just in the last few minutes, I'm curious about what's happened to the country in the sense that you have suddenly now have a majority in favor.
So I think it's very interesting, and it has been, as several of the justices pointed out today, it has been a rather rapid change in public opinion. And several of the justices were concerned that, well, we just don't know, what the implications of recognizing same-sex marriage might be. Justice Alito raised that in particular. He said, recognition of marriage equality for gay and lesbian couples is something that's newer than the internet and cell phones. And, as I've said before, I don't think that's really relevant to the constitutional analysis, but I think it does speak to a change in society and culture where, as we saw with Chief Justice Roberts' cousin, who is lesbian and was at the argument this morning, and some of the other Republicans, prominent conservatives who have come out in favor of marriage equality, everyone has someone in their life who is gay or lesbian. And when you see these people whom you love and respect and think about why their love for their partner isn't going to be honored in the same way that yours might be, then I think you really start to think very hard about whether these sorts of laws are really consonant with American values.
Well, obviously, you can't legislate love, but I think you can agree that there's not enough love out there, and then there's not enough parents who love their children, and gay parents certainly appear to love their children, perhaps even more, because it's so difficult for them to go through that process. And I was interested in how much there was talk of and concern for the children of gay married couples or gay couples who want to be married, and how these children are discriminated against. Did that strike you as being interesting?
That was a big topic of discussion, and Justice Kennedy brought up very early in the questioning of Mr. Cooper, who was defending Prop 8. He said, what about the voices of the nearly 40,000 children in California who are raised by same-sex parents? Don't they have the right to have their families be treated equally with other people's families? And I thought it was really interesting when Mr. Cooper, in trying to give some sort of legitimate reason for why you would want to exclude gay and lesbian couples from the institution of marriage, kept talking about the interests of the children. And it was brought up in response to that argument in California certainly can't hold any weight, because gay and lesbian couples are given the same right to adopt as opposite sex couples. And so if the state really believed that there was some negative consequence to children from being raised by same-sex couples, presumably they wouldn't have this policy. So it really just lays bare the idea that the only reason that these families, that these gay and lesbian couples are prohibited from marrying, is because the supporters of Proposition 8 wanted to say that their families and their relationships are inferior to opposite sex couples, and our Constitution simply does not allow for that.
Well, Elizabeth Wideright, thank you so much for joining us.
It's always a pleasure.
Again, I've been speaking with Elizabeth Wideright, who is the chief counsel of the Constitutional Accountability Center, a think tank, law firm, and action center dedicated to showing how the text and history of the Constitution supports progressive outcomes. She frequently participates in Supreme Court litigation and has argued several important cases in the federal courts of appeals, and attended the Supreme Court's hearing today on overturning Prop 8 in California. So we're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back talking about the BRICS meeting in South Africa and the visit by the new Chinese leader to Africa.
Ooh, love breaks the machine.